Oh, I'm so excited for this one. Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust funds we wish we were born with. Our guest today is someone I admire deeply. She has been expanding my understanding of the metaphysical side of money, of money as energy, somebody that I learned from. She doesn't even know this, but I'm addicted to her podcast, The Spiritual Investor. And this woman that's joining us today is a wealth of knowledge. She is a former energy trader. That means she was buying and selling commodities like oil, natural gas, electricity. I don't even know. I'm just imagining Wall Street vibes in a power suit. But she retired at the age of 39 and is now teaching others to create true financial freedom, as she teaches that wealth is a tool for freedom, not just accumulation. She has a revolutionary framework that blends really amazing spiritual alignment with real-world practical financial strategy. And she's helping people do the thing we're talking about all the time: collapse time, build timeless wealth, and create true financial sovereignty from the inside out. She has a show you need to listen, The Spiritual Investor Podcast. I am so pleased to introduce to our audience Elizabeth Ralph. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Yay, thank you. Oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. We are just going to have so much fun. The two of us, the audience, all of us. What are we going to create here?
Exactly. What are we going to create here? Yeah. There is so much that I've learned from you. And I think today's episode is going to be really good also for people who are spiritually skeptic, because the way that you explain the energy and vibration of money and the way that you approach everything has been very grounding for me, actually. So I'm excited to dive into that.
Thank you so much for saying that. Thank you for reflecting that back. That is very meaningful to me, because I love that you get that experience from it, because I think that there are so many just kind of in the clouds conversations going on out there. And even myself, I am like navigating this. Like, part of my journey is to bring things down from the clouds and to actually bring it into tangible real world examples. I mean, I'm writing a book right now, and the whole thing, like, you know, the people who are helping me write the book, it's like, that's what we're doing. We're going into like real world tangible examples so that people can put this stuff in play.
I'm so glad. We have to get to that. I have so many questions for you about what this all means. But before we get there, I think it's important to set the stage. And I want to get to the thing that is the key word for me that I think so many women listening are so intrigued by. You're retired. You retired. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, what does that even mean to you? Like, what happened in your internal world that took you from this high-powered job to retirement life?
Well, I decided when I was in my, I don't know, mid 30s, around 34, I decided, this is a great job. I love, you know, working on the trading floor. I loved all the people. I was very challenging. I was also taking financial exams at the time. So then I'd come home at night. So I'd work 12 hours. I'd come home. I'd study for exams until 11:30 at night. And I'd get up and I'd just do the whole thing over again. So I thought, okay, I don't want to be doing this like when I get older. I'm fine with doing that now. And then I also had already done the backpacking thing where I, you know, put the backpack on, 3 outfits, saw 17 countries, just, I'd already done that. I didn't want to do that again. So I'm like, okay, I actually want to be like an adult. I want to like walk away and be able to transition out of this and feel completely at ease with money. And so then I thought, well, okay, let me define that, which I think everyone should define their own version of financial freedom. Mm-hmm. And so my version was to be done with my long-term retirement. So have that box checked, so I'm not an old person getting kicked out on the street. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was to cover my entire cost of living from investing. So whether I worked or not, or went and got a job or whatever, you know, it didn't really matter. But I didn't cover things like travel and all that. I was just like, I'm going to meet my minimum, right? I don't have a mortgage or anything. So anyways, I ended up doing that. I had it set for 10 years. I ended up doing it in 8. Which was really great. Also during that time on the trading floor, a guy who, he's from India, and he joined the trading floor, and I was like, who is this guy? Like, he was totally like out of the box for like the people who would normally be there. And he had all these beautiful color statues on his desk and everything. And then we were standing in line one day for the, like, you know, they feed you at, you know, you have jobs like this, 'cause they don't want you to leave. Right. So we're standing in line, and he starts laughing about something, and I start laughing about it. And the two of us just became fast friends. I was like, oh my God, how was I born here? And he's born there. And so anyways, he took me in, he became a like a guru for me.
Okay.
And daily went through these old yellowed books that he brought, like all the Hindu, like I got the full foundation of all the Hindu teachings. I didn't know it at the time that, because they were kind of different worlds. I didn't realize at the time that they would kind of merge together. And I ended up starting a business where it was a real estate business that was generating a lot of profit and wealth. And I was donating a portion of it to horse rescues and kind of going along the spiritual element. Before I knew it, I was like, well, that's actually what's getting me through is the donation part and the joy of having the vacation rentals. And we got on HGTV and it was all fun. And so I was building wealth, but I was doing it as who I was in an enjoyable way. And then between that and being able to, like I said, cover my cost of living and my retirement, it was just natural. It was like, okay, today's the day to leave. And, you know, I told them I was going to leave and they said, will you stay 4 more months? And I said, I'll stay 2, and got a big bonus for staying 2 more months, bought a really expensive 3-day eventing horse, and then started competing and started riding and bought a big horse ranch and did nothing for 2 years except write, really. And then I started The Spiritual Investor.
And so what's so fascinating, it's like always the lessons come to us, you know, when we're not looking at them. Everything makes sense looking backwards, as I always say. So you're getting this education from this guru while you're like, yeah, still quote unquote on the trading floor. And I'm just so interested around the fact that you were able to do this and set this up for yourself, but you also come from that industry, yet you're teaching women who aren't in financial services industry how to also do that for themselves, right? So is mm-hmm. there an advantage that you had? Is there something that women should be looking at to do as you know, what's the foundation? Where do they start? They don't work on the trading floor. They work in retail or, you know, in an mm-hmm. office. Like, what are mm-hmm. the first things that you would say for somebody who finds that type of, you know, horse ranch life appealing to them? And that's what they want to do too.
Well, I would say the first thing is it has nothing to do with the amount of money. So what I explained to you, my journey, it started with $25,000 cash. That's all I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at the beginning of my career and I was like, okay, well, this is what I have. I'm going to find like the cheapest piece of real estate, like in the worst area of San Diego. I bought a duplex in City Heights. I think this was like 2011 or something. I put $25,000 down and then I fixed it up on weekends myself, everything that I could do myself. It was so covered in roaches that like the pest Ugh. Control people had to come like 5 times and I had to get the tenants out. And it was just like, okay, well, this is my starting place. Most people would have been like, oh, $25,000, like redo your kitchen. Cause I'd also just bought a house and I had this kitchen and it had these orange and brown floor tiles were on the countertops and had one stove eye that worked. And I was like, I don't care. I'd have work parties there or whatever. I was like, I don't care. Like people who are making like millions of dollars, like working on the field, they're coming to this. And I'm like, whatever. You just sit over here if you want. I was like, I'm putting that money in a rental property. So it's just like, I think it's don't get caught up on the amount. And we have to go back to having blinders on, so to speak, with what we want. I mean, we had this when we were a kid. Like if you wanted something as a kid, like you were wearing out the adults, like you were not going to shut up about you wanted that bike or you wanted something, right? It was just like, that was your whole world. Well, that's the same energy and it's within us all. We just don't use it anymore.
That's so juicy because it's like the energy of, I want it so bad. What you were craving so much of was the freedom to do your own thing and that goal. And I think I've been in the trap of getting sidelined by shiny object syndrome. I want this thing so bad, that thing so bad. And it detracts you from the bigger picture, which I think mm-hmm. is common for a lot of people.
Yes.
I mean, let's level set too, because like I said, I think this is a good conversation for people who are spiritually skeptical, as I like to call it. And, mm-hmm. and bringing these terms like back down to earth. So you talk a lot about money frequency. What the heck does that mean, Elizabeth? Like if I'm walking around, I've got bills to pay, I'm stressed out about my money, and you're telling me to raise my money frequency, what the heck does that even mean?
Well, this is great. So everyone's just on a frequency. I mean, we don't know our own frequency. We actually have no way to actually raise our frequency, lower our frequency, blah, blah, blah. The self-expression of who we are is actually what determines our frequency. And the way that we know our frequency is it gets reflected back to us from the experience of other people and from the building of our 3D world. And so most people, they have a default frequency when it comes to money. That's why people make the same amount of money typically over their lives. They maybe go up a little bit because you're expanding a little bit. You're moving around the comfort zone of your life and you're changing and you're growing a little bit. So you see this like almost like this curve where it's like, okay, you might make a little bit more here and a little bit more here. But a lot of people have this where they'll rubber band back. So they'll get a lot of money in and then all of a sudden they'll spend a lot of money or they'll go back in debt or they'll pay the debt off and they'll go back in debt. So you see that too. That's all just basically a signature of whatever frequency, the default frequency that you're operating on.
Yeah.
Now we have our default frequency, like, okay, you walk in the room, you walk into a restaurant and it's sort of like, okay, this is kind of who Amber is, right? There's a certain like vibrational resonance to you. Now you also superimposed on that, there is a frequency, a money frequency that you have. And so I think of it like the default frequency is likely more kind of like, if you think of it like a wave curve above and below the line, and then you have a horizontal sure. line. So the default frequency would be something more sort of palatable, more like, okay, you know, and there's an openness to receive, there's a giving, there's all of that. And then the money frequency, if you think about it, is going to look really like your highs and lows. What you're trying to do is you're trying to bridge those gaps. So you're trying to bring that money frequency back down into more of who you are so that money becomes effortless. Wealth becomes a self-expression of you rather than something outside of you that you need to do. And so people name all these goals, especially around like beginning of the year. And it's like, they're like, let me shoot for the moon. Well, those goals actually aren't part of who you are. And so there's always like this 3D world, exhaustive doingness, awkwardness, almost like when I stepped in the elevator at the trading floor every morning, I'd feel this little inkling of I'm dying, because after a while, it wasn't me and I was pretending. So I think that's kind of what's happening out there with money.
And this is the benefit, y'all, of listening to her podcast, because I teed her up for this question perfectly to call back to. Talk to us about the transition of your frequency, leaving the trading floor, leaving that career, and going and being on your ranch and being with your horses. And how did that bring you back into your frequency?
It did, but it didn't actually bring me into the money frequency of being an entrepreneur. And so I actually didn't realize that it was two different things, because when I was working in corporate and I'm making six-figure bonuses and I'm like, you know, I wasn't really the product. I was designing the product, right? I was fulfilling a product, right? Okay. People would buy something and then I would go and I would find it and I would sell it to them. When I became an entrepreneur, I was the product. And so suddenly it's like I had to look at, well, like, what's my level of transparency? What, like, how do I even fit in this? So I've had the spiritual investor for 8 years. Mm-hmm. For the first 2 years, I didn't make any money. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the person who has always made money. What the hell's wrong with me, right? It didn't really click into me that I had to drop into a brand new frequency that was bringing in money in a whole new way. It was very much not the same thing as the old world that I'd been in.
Okay, this is so interesting, because I love when you say, you know, you don't have to, or we can't change our frequency. It's just a reflection mm-hmm. of who you are, right? And so it's reflected back at you. And then when you're aligned with your frequency, it's less about all the things you need to do in the 3D and more about coming home to yourself. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Because when you are in your aligned frequency, what happens is you don't have this feeling of not enough. You know, like if you're in a relationship or you're talking about money, or even when you're talking about like if you're driving somewhere, most people have this latent full time, I need to be somewhere else, or this is not enough, or I've got to get more, or how do I, like, there's some type of measurability that applies to that. And so when you are in your default, your ease frequency, that's one of the ways that you know that you're in your, so you can't set your frequency. However, you can be aware of your frequency by, God, I've got enough. This is good enough right now. And there's a certain openness to that. And that's ironically when money comes in.
Okay, so the ease frequency. And can you talk to us? I'm so interested in your relationship with horses and how horses show up in your work and your logo marks and all the things. What's the spiritual connection for you with horses and the story there?
Yeah, so during that time when I was on, you know, working on the training floor and then the guru came in, during that time, I went to, it was camping and I lived in San Diego. So you live in San Diego, right?
Yeah, I do.
And, and there was this white horse. So I get out of the car and I see this white horse and I walk by this horse and I looked in his eyes and I just felt like, oh my God, I just saw the whole world in this horse's eyes. And so I rode the horse that weekend and he was kind of, I wasn't, you know, I had ridden motocross, you know, earlier in my life. I hadn't really ridden horses, but I'd always kind of played sports and things like that. So I was able to do it, but I wasn't really a great horse rider. Right. Okay. And I made it work. And then the guy who owned the horse happened to be my contractor who was helping me remodel all these homes. And he was at my personal home and one day, and I happened to be home from work and he's like, he starts crying and he said, you know, I have to sell the horse. And I'm like, you can't sell that horse. And he's like, yeah, I have to, I need the money. And I was like, I'll buy it. So I'm living in the city and I'm all of a sudden I'm a horse owner. And then I own a second horse and then I just kind of start getting into it and I start riding and then I start 3-day eventing and it kind of opens the world up. But I got involved in horse rescues because of the horses and I started getting into that world and it was really helpful for me because what it did is I have the spiritual connection with horses. I mean, you know, the heart resonance with horses. So their hearts will actually go in sync with our hearts, but you get within 4 feet of them. They're really, really amazing animals. They're very much a connection for us to the spiritual world. So I had that element of it, but I also, the benefit is by going and donating to the horse rescues and things like that, it got me out of my world. Because I think sometimes we're so embedded in our world and we take ourselves so seriously that sometimes we get out of our world and it almost creates like an observer effect for us to look back in and go, oh, well, why are you sweating that, Elizabeth? You know, what's the big deal?
Right. It is being with horses part of your getting into your ease frequency practice?
It's a letting go. So frequency, like you can be at ease and actually be in a very blocked money frequency,
okay.
Or you can be the opposite too. So the way that we feel isn't indicative of the frequency. You can feel any way in a frequency. So let me give you an example. Like,
yeah, please.
You know, a lot of people say that they're bad with money.
Right.
Right. And so that's going to put them in a really constrained kind of vibration when it comes to money. It's going to constrain the relationship. However, if I looked at you and said, okay, all these people around you right now, I'm going to give you $50,000 and I need you to get all of them to safety. You're no longer bad with money. You're completely open. Your frequency is completely shifted. You're not actually on the frequency of your default identity anymore because what you've done is you've dropped into your power. And so you might not be feeling ease and happy and joy though, right? But your frequency has shifted. So they're independent things.
Okay. So let's talk about debt because this is something that I know a lot of our audience is struggling with right now. And can you speak to what's happening for people on whether it's a spiritual plane or a metaphysical plane when they continue to find themselves in debt? And what would your approach be to that?
Well, debt is actually abundance. Debt is a financial instrument. I mean, really, really, really wealthy people use debt strategically and actually save a lot of money by not paying taxes. And they do all types of amazing things with debt. So I think there is a lot of really feeling bad. There's a lot of shame and guilt. There's a lot of conditioning that goes on debt. It's sort of like more of the end of the spectrum where it's not used as a wealth strategy.
Yeah.
However, if you look at it in terms of the micro effect of your life, it could be that it's been used as a wealth strategy. It could be that at some point that was something that you believed that was going to uplift your life, right? A lot of, you know, people have debt over mortgages, people have debt over cars, right? So the only thing that debt means is, what does it mean to you in the moment? At some point, someone or basically a company thought enough of you to say, here you go, here's some money, go do what you want with it. And so now all you're doing is you're just looking at a spectrum of ones and zeros, which money is just energy. Mm-hmm. And so it's once you change your relationship to debt as it being like this horrible thing that you did that you have to like now correct and do something about, if you could actually levelize it and get into, you've heard me talk about money neutrality, get into money neutrality with it, that debt is actually going to disappear. And because you're in money neutrality, you're not going to feel that not enough, and you're not going to feel that wanting to go back and actually build more debt. So you don't have to put forced restrictions on yourself either, because it's kind of like once you start eating healthy, you can't go to McDonald's anymore. Mm-hmm. The same thing will happen when you start to practice money neutrality with it.
100%. I always say that debt is just an energetic exchange that hasn't been completed. Like you got something, you said, I owe you, but you just haven't paid the I owe you yet. And that's right. I think it's interesting of like you say, it's, you know, obviously we talk about it's a financial instrument, but also that it's a form of abundance. I actually haven't heard that said that way before so clearly, or maybe I haven't listened in that way, but it is. It's like you wanted something at that time and it accelerated it getting to you using this financial instrument, whatever that thing was that you wanted. So we need to talk about collapsing timelines, but I think we should start with money neutrality. Will you explain to the audience what that means?
Well, money neutrality is the greatest opening to money. So money neutrality is the void. So that is the effortless sort of whatever you're doing in life, you're tumbling through life, you're living life how you want. And money neutrality is effectively, it's an invite. And so, you know, you can kind of think of it in terms like, let's say that you meet someone like out somewhere and maybe you have a little bit of a spark interest in them, right? Well, probably the reason that you have that spark interest and that you want to sort of share your energy with that person is because there's been some type of energetic invite set up. They're kind of drawing you in. You're a little bit more curious, right? And so that same energy actually can apply. You can reverse that so that you're actually creating the invite, and it's that drawing in and that's curiosity. And what's happening is you're in neutrality with it because you're not needing something, right? Like that person that you're drawn into, one of the reasons you're drawn in is because they're not needing anything, right? You feel the lightness of that. So money neutrality is a created state of being that actually is allowing money to come in. And then once you have that money, then you can take it one step further and you can expand it through investing or do the things that you want to do. Now, again, money neutrality isn't necessarily feeling at ease and feeling good. You can feel at ease and be in money neutrality, but money neutrality, and you're never going to be absolutely in neutrality. You're going to get more towards neutrality. So an example would be, maybe you have a bill and it used to bother you that you would have to pay something like that, and it doesn't anymore. So you can notice that you are closer to neutrality in that instance, because we're always moving towards it.
And what would you say to somebody who right now their experience of money is, you know, and I hear this all the time, like we need to be in an abundance mindset and don't be in a scarcity mindset. And maybe somebody's walking around right now and they're like, I've got bills I can't pay. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. Like I'm struggling out here, Elizabeth. Like, what do I do to get to money neutrality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so those bills are going to be there regardless, right? Because that's just kind of what is in the moment. The bills are there, right? Let's say you have two bills. You owe $150 and you owe $1,000. So you're walking down the street, you owe $150 and $1,000. So it can either be as simple as you owe those two things, or it can be your relationship to owing those two things. Your focus is on one or the other, and it's 99% of the time, it's your relationship to those things and what you're limited by, what you're controlled by, what your sacrifice is, what you have to do, what you don't have time to do, what you don't want to do. That's our starting point. So in order to get to money neutrality in that example, you shift your starting point to there is no relationship. And it makes sense because, you know, you talked about collapsing time. If you were outside of time, mm-hmm. then you would actually see that it makes no sense, because after you pay those bills, the next day, you don't have a relationship to that anymore. Mm-hmm. because it's in time. You have the ability, collapsing time, you have the ability to step outside of it and go, well, if I don't have a relationship after I pay the bill, why do I have to have a relationship before it? And suddenly you take your entire life back.
1,000%. It's all about the meaning that we assign to all of these things that influences the way that we see them. Please explain to the audience, what does it mean to collapse time? I'm still trying to understand this myself, Elizabeth.
Yeah. So the way that I see this is, you know, and I talk about this with the spiritual investor, which is basically you're pulling energy down from the universal world, and we're kind of walking across a bridge. We're learning to navigate this bridge where we can take the energy and then we can put it into the 3D world and we can use it in the 3D world. That's what we all want to do, right? Mm-hmm. What we're mostly doing is we're just operating in the 3D world like these little minions that are going around, and we're basing everything on circumstance and we're recreating all this stuff. I mean, we would look ridiculous to people who are like looking down on us, I swear to God. And actually it's funny because we are the observer. And so we are looking at ourselves, and we could have a whole conversation on that. But as you learn how to navigate the bridge, because time only exists in the 3D world, time doesn't exist in the universal world. So as you learn how to navigate the bridge, then what happens is you're able to step outside of it, and you're able to operate in terms of other concepts that are actually going to help you take action, which would be momentum. So you can, time is the 3D world, mm-hmm. and momentum is the energy world. I'm still going to get that thing done, whether I'm operating on momentum or time. Mm-hmm. Which one am I choosing to believe in? The moment I don't believe in time, I have freed myself from those things like, oh, I'm going to make $1 million in the next 12 months. Well, you've just said to the universe that you're happy to wait for 12 months. So if you say, I'm going to make $1 million, or I am making $1 million, however you want to phrase it, the more, what time does is it allows you to bring everything back into the now. And so then what it does is it creates a responsibility that, well, if I'm making $1 million right now, I guess that means I need to do one thing towards it.
100%.
The collapsing of times is really just getting back to you.
Okay. I love that. I think that's so interesting too, in the entrepreneurial world of, we see this, like, I want to have a 7-figure year, and then, you know, they make $999,000 and they feel like a failure, versus how many millions of dollars did you create over the lifetime of your business? And this mm-hmm. time constraint of, you know, bills are due, and, you know, when does my paycheck come in, and all these things, I think it puts a lot of pressure on humans. Mm-hmm. And your concept of being outside of time with money is new to me. It really is. And I think it's hard to grasp. And how do you, is there any practical, like, other, I love the momentum versus time. Like, what other anchors can you give us to start to conceptualize this in a different way to get out of the 3D?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, money has no relationship to time. I mean, in the 3D world, we can talk about compound interest. That's an expansion that's going on, but that's happening outside of us. That's a system, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's like, okay, you put gas in the car and then the car goes, right? Time is, it only even exists because we agree to it. And so I use time instead of time using me. So I agreed I was going to be here to do this podcast at a certain time. So I'm using that. Mm-hmm. However, I'm not going to let time use me in terms of, I probably haven't said it in a decade, I don't have time, because that's the biggest lie there is, right? Mm-hmm. I challenge time. I even challenge myself when it comes to my own timing of things. Like, I don't record podcasts at 8:00 at night because I'm too tired. If that comes up in my mind, then I'm going to challenge that. The moment you challenge that and you disprove that, then what you're doing is you're breaking yourself out of the matrix. You're breaking yourself out of the matrix that you have actually agreed to yourself. And you can do this over and over again. And what you'll start to do is, outside of time, you'll start to build a brand new version of you. And you don't actually know you're a new version until you're looking back on the old version and saying, I can't be that anymore. And that's what we're really trying to do. We're trying to expand into different versions, different. So what you're doing is you're lifting the rules off of you that are limiting you, because all time is really doing is creating an overall diminished effect for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you're aging is an example, not having enough hours in the day, not having a full weekend. Like, why do we agree to that? If you really think about it, why is there a system that continues to take things away from us and make us feel more constrained and locked in. And we're still freaking agreeing to it.
It's so true. And it's one of the things when you say breaking away from the matrix, again, it's all these little buzzwords. We all hear this on social media. People are telling us, buy my course, collapse timelines, break the matrix, da, da, da. But what you just said is exactly what I've picked up from the Spiritual Investor podcast. It's like, what stories am I telling myself? I don't even know where I got these from. And I just believe them. But until you become the observer of like, why do I think that? What is it? And you said this earlier too about debt. It was like, I used to think very little of myself when I was in a lot of credit card debt. I felt I was bad with money. I'm always going to be in debt. I'm always going to struggle, until I started to learn how the wealthy use debt for leverage to build more assets. Or why do I think that debt is bad, but when I get money, it's good? How can money be good and bad at the same time? How are these things like, right? Like I'm just assigning meaning to it. It's like a knife. A knife can be used to cut an apple. It could be used to kill somebody. The knife is not bad. It's the meaning you assign to it. It's whatever you're doing with it. So I'm so interested now, Elizabeth, we've kind of set the stage with kind of where people might be struggling with money. I want to take them to what you're the best at, which is multiplying wealth and really building this framework of growing wealth. And I'd love to know if you could explain, because I think a lot of people look at investing and they're like, it's charts, it's numbers, it's the stock market, it's the economy, it's all these things happening outside of me. What's spiritual about investing?
God, that's such a great question. So one of the things that I love about investing is, you know, going back to even our conversation about frequency. So when you have all of your money sort of like set up the way that you've always set it up, typically people have a certain value system, a certain belief system. They have their risk tolerance. They have their safety. They have their, oh, you can never do that. Or this person does this and da, da, da. So once you start investing, then what happens is you are taking money that has come to you based on your frequency, because the money that's coming to you is matching your frequency wherever you are, right? Mm-hmm. So you're taking that, and then what you're doing is you're sort of throwing it outside of you, and then you're putting it into an investing account. As long as you are energetically still somewhat connected to that, right? You're not seeing that as something that you don't know how to do, or that's not working, or as long as you're not pulling it down, so to speak, with your own conditioning and emotional stories, then you're setting it free, which is why I like long-term wealth. I don't like to do the whole day trading thing anymore. I like to like energetically get behind a stock, and then I'm like, it's like a bird. You like set it free. Then what happens is that's on its own frequency then. And that's sort of, so then that's working in the background for you. You know, even looking at going back to like the what is, like, the time that we're living in now, investing is not an option anymore, because the cost of living versus income versus two people working versus what it takes to live now, and it's not the same. So the system that you learned money from, which was your parents and in growing up, does not apply. It's not broken or wrong. You have to, it's fine, but it literally does not apply anymore. But yet people are still trying to like put that square peg in the round hole kind of thing.
Right.
Investing is just like going to the grocery store now. It's literally like investing, taxes, childcare, all that, like it's equal to all of that, because you can't save your way into financial freedom anymore like you used to. And the way that we're moving into the new world paradigm, which we're already in and we're learning how to live in, people aren't willing to exhaust themselves anymore and trade time for energy. So you can't even play in the system unless you're willing to use the system and allow money to get you out of earned income.
Okay. Like that's big, because I think what you say is so true. Again, we learned these things. We felt like we knew the path forward and everything's changed, everybody feels. And it's not necessarily that everything's changed. It's that there's a new way to be, a new way to be with money that I think a lot of us weren't exposed to in a young age. So they feel a little uncomfortable with it. And I think one of the things that I hear from a lot of people is like, well, how do I know where to put my money? How do I know what to do? Am I supposed to follow my intuition? Because that feels risky, especially if you don't have a financial background like Elizabeth Ralph does. Like, how do you guide women to trust their intuition and participate in this new paradigm if they don't feel educated in it?
Well, and I love this because, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, and I guess, you know, we're doing that this here, we're creating this, right? To me, it feels like, you know, we say, okay, well, there used to be the phone, the telephone that was in the house. And then we had this thing that you could take with us that we called a cell phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. So people aren't, they didn't sit out there and go, I don't know how to use a cell phone. I realize that we're in an age where this is a phone that is a mobile phone you travel everywhere with.
Mm-hmm.
People said, show me how to use that. Show me how to do that, right? Well, it's the same thing, right? With investing, which is now an integrated part of like well-being, like mm-hmm. like expanding money is part of your well-being. Like mm-hmm. you don't want to carry the weight of all the money that you need from now and forever, right?
Right.
So there isn't this big thing where it's so difficult to do. And I think that I get that the financial world used to frame it like that because, you know, money managers wanted you to pay them and pay all their fees and make it seem like it's so difficult. I guess if I had anything to say, it's like, it's so not difficult. Like you, like to open an investing account, they make it so easy because they want you to open an investing account. Don't get caught up on what the platform is. Just pick some platform and then just go with it. And then you literally go to trade, buy, market, stock, preview, order, click done.
Yeah.
And then all you do is you just put more money in there. Like it is as easy as pulling through a gas station. And so what do people buy? You can easily start with the S&P 500 and ETF or top 10 ETFs or something totally easy like that. I mean, if you mm-hmm. wanted to, I mean, obviously I love like building portfolios that are designed specifically with stocks and ETFs and all types of instruments, right? But you don't have to start there. And the momentum is what you're looking for, because that's why I say it's not about the amount. I don't care if you start with $50. It's the momentum. It's the, holy shit, I did this and it worked.
Yes, absolutely. It's that little micro step and that proof, that evidence proof. Back that it's happening. That builds the confidence.
Yeah. And I can't give you that by telling you anything. And scrolling through social media is never going to give it to you.
100%. One of the things I'd love for you to speak about too is the cost of waiting. What's happening when women are waiting to get started?
Well, I mean, obviously the market just continues to move and move and build, right? I mean, even just in the last six months, I think we're up like 23% in the last six months. So there's that. Waiting is lack energy though. And so if you're waiting to invest, you're likely waiting in other areas of your life to do a lot of things. And so your life is more about, and your energy is going towards maintaining your waiting rather than your energy going towards actually what are your goals and what do you actually want? And are you building something? And I think that's the difference that we see. Like you see these people who go out there and they build these multi-million-dollar businesses and then suddenly they have five of them and you're like, how do you do this? It's because they refuse to wait. That waiting energy is literally you agreeing that you're not ready yet. It's like a silent request to the universe. I think it's one of the big things that stops people.
I agree. And I also, I'd love to kind of explore the other side of it too. I mean, the market's been ripping for the last 6 months, 4 years, whatever it's been. The waiting, I also hear from a lot of people, like I'm waiting for home prices to go down. I'm waiting for the market to correct. And this waiting energy, what do you say when the market's in a correction or it goes down? And like, what is the energetic alignment with that and letting that bird fly?
Well, you know, I see the market as something that expands. And so, I mean, I invested quite a bit of money this year on April 16th, which was it wasn't the actual bottom after they announced the tariffs, but it was 2 days off of it. So there's no waiting. No one was buying then. Like when people aren't buying, people are really waiting then. And that historically, if you look back, has been the best time to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's even worse to wait during the downturns, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Investing is also a practice, and it is an energetic thing that goes along with our nervous system. And, you know, women especially are not going to like just go against their feelings and all of that. And so if you're not investing when it's a random Wednesday, you're definitely not going to invest when you might think it's a market high or you might think it's a market low. Investing is something that you just jump into. It's kind of like no one's going to be able to teach you how to swim from reading a book. You got to jump in the pool. There's never a better time to jump in the pool except for now. Mm-hmm. And everyone who has done that continues to benefit from that. No one who has an investing account for the last, I don't know how long, months, years, has said, oh shit, I should have waited. I shouldn't have bought on that Wednesday. I should have waited 2 weeks, says no one.
Literally. Literally. And it's something we talk about a lot here on Old Money. I've coined this term financial fight or flight, which is where money triggers people so much. They're not thinking with their prefrontal cortex. They're not thinking with the observer effect. They're thinking in a reactive state. And if you can't be emotionally regulated, you can't, like you said, invest on a random Wednesday. You can't invest on a black Wednesday. You can't invest on a green Wednesday or whatever it is. So I think that's really important. And I'd love for you to speak to where you think things are going. I mean, we're talking about creating legacy wealth as we're looking at 2025 and beyond. And I share your vision of the market is always expanding. Let's look historically. Let's again be the observer of the bigger picture here. Like, what type of spiritual spaces, investment spaces are you paying attention to, whether it's an asset class or a consciousness practice? Like, what's coming up for you in the expansion of this?
Well, I always look at like, where's the money flowing? Because that's a really big indicator. Like, where's the most money flowing and what's happening out there on a macroeconomic level? I'm always looking at that. And I'm looking also at what intuitively is going to be happening here and kind of unfolding as well. So it's interesting because if you look at like, let's take a business like Amazon, who one of the great things about Amazon is that they have multiple streams of income, if you will. They have multiple different types of business units that are, depending on where the economy is, are going to make different types of revenue, right? Mm-hmm. And so within that, we're seeing like a microclimate of diversification. So overall, financial freedom is diversification, right? You don't have financial freedom if you only have an investing account, because what if the market goes down and then that's like the rug's taken out, right?
Right.
Diversification, the more asset classes you have, the closer you are to financial freedom. So if we look at that and we say, okay, well, we in the past have had these asset classes that are pretty, you know, we've had, you know, stocks and bonds. That was pretty much it before, and real estate, right? And now we have all of these different things. You know, you've got crypto, you've got people buying farmland, you've got, you know, even fractional shares. Like even within the asset class, it's gone to like so much of a more like creative aspect to it. So I think where we're going is that the people who are going to do really well are the ones who are not locked out of investing in certain asset classes because of their previous conditioning. And instead, they're literally watching where the money is flowing. Like as an investor, you have to take the financial knowledge and you have to take it in. Okay, like I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett and the way he invests. However, I'm also going to leave that aside because it's not that same era. Now we have AI and now we have all these things. So the more you move towards diversification with your asset classes, which I think, and I'm expecting us to see even more asset classes coming up. Like I'm super excited about it. And I love to move money in between asset classes. And that's what people were doing during COVID too, by the way, is people were just moving, wealthy people were just moving money around. They weren't worried about, you know, earned income. So the more asset classes I have, the more I can move it around. Maybe I'm moving it out of crypto. Maybe I'm moving it out of the stock market. Maybe I'm moving it into fixed income. It depends on what interest rates do, like all this. Once you actually start to get these asset classes, your creativity and your joy clicks in. That's the crazy thing about it. That's when it becomes fun, like you're a painter.
I love that. I love that. And I think just to underline what you said of, and you know, we can look historically on the market over time and where we believe our country will continue to grow and expand. But the work that you're doing, Elizabeth, and support that you're giving women to get into these asset classes and to participate and to diversify and to set up these systems for themselves, that's expansive. And the more people that play in the game, the better off we all are. So, I mean, I could talk to you for about 5 more hours because we haven't even scratched the surface of the universe and all the things. But to wrap us up today, Elizabeth, I'd love to ask you 5 rapid fire rich girl questions to get your first take on these. How do you feel about that?
Love it.
Okay. So what is a wealthy woman ritual that you do for yourself?
Work out. Honestly, it's the first thing that comes to mind.
I love it.
What about, what was the last best thing you invested in for yourself?
Last best thing. I have a tendency to pick good, like really good solid stocks that might seem like they're sort of a shot in the dark, but they're not really. And I get strong feelings about them. And I usually can pick at least one or two of these every month. And so I would say, you know, probably that really is what rings the bell for me.
I love it. Just
picking like, you know, like a fringy AI stock. And then all of a sudden it goes from, I think one of them went from $57 and now it's trading at $600. It's like,
oh, okay.
So you don't need a whole lot of those, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. What does the word wealth really mean to you today?
Freedom to do what you want.
I love that. What in your life makes you feel the wealthiest?
Being able to do this to help people. And when I'm fully, fully open and connected just in general, but especially when I'm helping people with money.
I love that. And that's such a talent of yours. You've helped me so much. Last one is, if you had to put your message on a bumper sticker for the spiritual investor, what would it be?
Show up needing nothing, receive all.
Okay, mic drop. That's it. I'm obsessed. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here with us today. Where can everybody find you? What do you have going on? Tell us about your courses. Tell us everything.
TheSpiritualInvestor.com or Elizabeth Ralph on Instagram, or just The Spiritual Investor Podcast, any of those places, and just reach out. I'm happy to help you.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your light and your perspective and the absolute universal truth on money with us in such a short amount of time. I have to encourage all of our listeners, you have to go subscribe to the Spiritual Investor Podcast. It is grounding, but it is uplifting. It's a great one. So thank you again, Elizabeth, for being here with us. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you.